And welcome to the midday, Joe Morris.
Hi.
And welcome to the midday, Christopher Taylor.
Thank you.
Welcome back, I should say. Good to have you back, Kit. And they're teaming up here for the first time, right?
Yeah, this is the first time.
Correct.
To perform this version of the midday today. And for the first time, because although, Kit, you've been around for about 10 or 12 years here,
yeah,
right?
13.
In this area. Joe is so new that you say the snow thing is new to you.
Yeah, exactly. I have been here for a couple weeks playing with the Madison Symphony and moved here from Los Angeles, California. And so the snow today has been a real new experience for me.
Well, I'd say you got a pretty gentle introduction. As people will say, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Okay, good to know.
But it's all part of the coziness for a November afternoon. That I think it's going to be a good day for listening to the radio, especially to some stellar performing from you two. And now, are you from California originally?
Yeah, I grew up in the Northern California area in San Jose, and I spent the last 5 years in Los Angeles studying at the University of Southern California and then the Colburn Conservatory of Music.
And then you saw this job opening at the Madison Symphony and decided to go for it? Is it that simple?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, there are quite a few clarinetists out there who are on what we call the audition circuit.
And yeah, sure.
Word gets around and we all almost travel as a pack to auditions in Detroit and Florida and Texas. And a bunch of us were here in Madison for the principal clarinet audition.
And what kind of things did you play on the audition? This is a blind audition. This is the kind of thing that's been done for a couple hundred years in some places, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a very well-run audition. They asked a very standard but comprehensive list of orchestral excerpts as well as the exposition from the Mozart clarinet concerto. And so over the course, I think I must have spent about 8 hours in Overture Hall that day playing three rounds of auditions over the course of the day, going from about 50 or 60 candidates down to the final five.
Well, they have to test your stamina as well as your virtuosity.
I guess that's right, yeah.
And so what are the really, speaking of stamina, what are the really demanding clarinet parts in that regard?
Well, they all test you in a different way. Probably the most overall challenging ones, not necessarily from a stamina standpoint, but just from a clarinet standpoint, are the Beethoven symphonies.
Really?
4, 6, and 8 really feature solos that demand you to have a real ability all over the range of the clarinet. But as far as stamina is concerned, the longer excerpts would be one that I'm playing this coming weekend with the symphony. Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony has a very extended clarinet solo in the third movement.
Lovely.
Yeah. So.
Well, so you're getting put to the test early then.
Exactly.
And we'll look forward to that. Now, about this Debussy piece, it has this kind of funny name, Premier Rhapsody, the first Rhapsody, but there is no second Rhapsody.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting that way, but it is one of those clarinet standards, isn't it?
Definitely. It's really one of my favorite pieces for the clarinet. I know it was written for the Paris Conservatory kind of graduation competition that they used to hold every single year. And, you know, it's a really great duo piece that features a lot for both the clarinet and the piano.
And you hear it orchestrated fairly often, but Kit, what do we lose in an orchestration of the Premier Rhapsody, do you think?
Well, it's always a trade-off, I guess. I've been thinking about this issue recently, actually, just a slight tangent that I've been working on lists, transcriptions of the Beethoven symphonies.
Oh, those are fun, aren't they?
Piano, two hands. And so this is sort of the reverse, because this was the original, and then the orchestration came later. And, you know, it's just a different view. And, of course, with the piano part, you're maybe less distracted by all of these special, neat, timbral effects that you can get with an orchestra. But, of course, on a subtler level, a piano can create all sorts of colors of its own. So, and, of course, with Debussy, that's par for the course. You expect to have to explore all of the instrument's sonic possibilities.
So we're going to do just that with this first public performance by Christopher Taylor and Joe Morris. This is the Premier Rhapsody of Claude Debussy. Premier Rhapsody of Claude Debussy, and the end of it there. Now, I haven't heard the what I'll call the other Rhapsody for a while, that kind of notorious saxophone Rhapsody that he wrote, but the ending reminds me of that. Do you have the sense that, unlike what I hear about the sax Rhapsody, that Debussy collaborated very closely with a clarinetist when he wrote this? You know the story behind it?
I know that he didn't, I think, collaborate with any particular clarinetist. I think it was premiered by a number of students at the Paris Conservatory who would premiere a piece in their graduation kind of competition every year. And he was among, you know, at a certain point there were many famous French composers at the conservatory who would write a piece every year for, whether it be flute or another instrument. And so I think he just wrote this in the mind of it basically being a competition piece, that everybody would have a different interpretation and that it would be very apparent what your strengths and weaknesses would be based on how you played the piece.
I can imagine that. I mean, it's only, you know, 8 or 9 minutes long, and yet there are some, obviously, Brahms, for example, clarinet sonatas that run much longer.
Sure.
But are they as much of a workout as this?
Well, a very different workout. You know, the Debussy manages to cover a huge amount of ground in the short amount of time that you play the piece. Everything from a soft, floating tone to a very germy, notey, scherzando theme. Whereas the Brahms might capture all of those elements, it just takes him 30 minutes rather than 8.
Let me ask a kind of an age question here. You know, at the ripe old age of 24, you have not been alive as long as some clarinetists have been playing the instrument and perhaps even auditioning for that same spot that you got with the Madison Symphony. So how long have you been at it and how did you come to it?
Well, I started the clarinet when I was 9 years old in fourth grade. There was a choose your instrument day at my school, elementary school, and you could choose between the trumpet, flute, or clarinet for fourth graders. And I got there late. I was in the back of the line. And by the time I got to the front, all the flutes and trumpets had been taken. So they gave me this crazy looking piece of wood. And here I am 14 years later, still playing it. So.
Was there something about it that you liked despite this rather haphazard approach to it?
At first, I honestly didn't really think about it at a young age. I think the big difference that was made for me was my very first teacher. And he had such a passion for, his name is Fred Rast, he teaches in San Jose. He had such a passion for music, and he made every single lesson such an exciting experience for me that I looked forward to nothing more than my weekly clarinet lesson. So.
You caught on. As far as the repertory for the instrument, I mean, do we find anything prior to, let's say, Mozart for the clarinet, or are we talking about a different fish by that point?
Yeah, you can see from Mozart's music that the things that he wrote were experimenting with different kinds of clarinets. For example, the piece we're about to play was originally written for a basset clarinet. With an extended range.
Horn, the so-called
not exactly a basset horn. The basset horn is a more close relative to the bass clarinet. Mm-hmm. It sits on the floor. Whereas the basset clarinet, was really owned and started by this clarinetist Anton Stadler.
A good friend of Mozart's.
Right, which was basically looks exactly the same as a regular clarinet, just about, I don't know, 6 inches, 7 inches longer, extending down to a low C. And so you can really notice from that Mozart was writing for an instrument that was in its early life. The things that you get before Mozart were written for, you know, the Chalumeau, which became the bottom half of the clarinet, or the clarion, upper half of the clarinet. And so really Mozart, I would say, as far as I know, is the earliest person who wrote, especially solo music for the clarinet.
Other than the solo music, does he use the clarinet much in his symphonic writing?
In a few of his later symphonies, 39, for example, has a wonderful clarinet part. And the other is his wind writing. The wind Grand Partita, the two wind serenades in C minor and E flat are just fantastic clarinet parts. So.
Sure. Very, very effective. And there are notes on his letters, in fact, that refer to him being impressed by the performances of these serenades. There was one that was done as a surprise name day present for him, and he got pretty excited about that. Do you think there's a particular thing that he's trying to achieve with the clarinet? I mean, we hear about, you know, Bach, for example, using certain instruments for certain effects in the cantatas.
You can certainly see him take advantage of the wide range of the clarinet. Not as prominently in the second movement, but in the first movement of his concerto, you jump around an exceptional amount between the very high and very low ranges.
Oh, he loves to do that for voices too, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, I guess that's true. But overall, I mean, it's really Mozart is Mozart. You can hear the same incredible ideas that he puts into his symphonies in the clarinet writing.
And so this is the slow movement, the second movement of his clarinet, his one and only clarinet concerto.
Thank you.
hard to imagine anyone writing more sublimely for the clarinet than Mozart. And I think he did then pretty much take to the, of course, the instrument wasn't that well developed until fairly late in his career anyway, was it?
Right, yeah.
But I'm trying to remember, I was almost thinking that the Masonic funeral music was also for clarinet. Am I remembering that right?
I have not experienced that.
Late Mozart pieces, yes. Okay. Great stuff. Are you breathed up? You have a lot of music that we're going to pack in the next 25 minutes, so you might be tested here for that stamina that we mentioned before. What about this piece?
This is one of my favorite contemporary solo clarinet pieces. I worked it up this summer for a competition I went to in Denmark called the Carl Nielsen International Clarinet Competition. And, you know, the clarinet has a pretty wide variety of pieces to choose from as far as unaccompanied contemporary music, partially, I think, because we can do so many crazy acrobatics. And this piece features quite a few of them. You'll hear multiphonics, quarter tones, glissandos, flutter tonguing, the whole nine yards. But I love about this piece, especially because it doesn't take itself very seriously. If you listen carefully, you'll hear homages to Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, Strauss's also Sprach Zarathustra. You'll hear some riffs on Benny Goodman. It's quite a wild ride, and it's fun the whole way. So.
And it's called The Fantasy for Solo Clarinet. That's a kind of a humble title. By
Jörg Wiedmann, a German composer who's also a fantastic clarinet player as well.
Joe Morris. Thank you. You're right. Full of humor. That was Georg Widmann?
Georg
Widmann, the fantasy for solo clarinet. And we're going to put you right back to it pretty quickly here so that we can get that last piece in and bring in Kit Taylor again for that, too. But let me repeat quickly our quiz question right after this here on WPR.
Bill Cosby once remarked that insanity is hereditary. He said, you get it from your kids. Well, I'm not dead certain about that, but there is something special about family music making. Hi, this is Bill McLaughlin of Exploring Music, inviting you to join us as we explore all sorts of family music making. Husbands and wives, fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, even siblings playing together. That's In a Family Way, this week on Exploring Music.
Thank you to businesses who help support WPR programs, including Alvarado Real Estate Group, Festival Choir of Madison, and American Folklore Theater. Play a role in the success of WPR. Become a corporate sponsor. Go to WPR.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from Ula Eyewear, a locally owned store offering fashionable, colorful frames and sunglasses for men and women, including prescription and non-prescription options, located in the Hilldale Shopping Center off Midvale.
Here's the quiz question again. Monroe was, Lincoln was, Andrew and Lyndon Johnson were, Truman was, Ford was, and so were 21 others. What were they? You can answer the question in the next 12 minutes by emailing Stephanie at midday@WPR.org, or you can call 1-800-442-7106 and give that answer to Sholly. And now, are we rested up and ready for this?
I think so.
I'll just do a one-line intro. The composer's name is Bassi. Fantasy on themes from Verdi's Rigoletto, and the clarinetist, Joe Morris, the pianist, Christopher Taylor.
Thank you.
At which point, hundreds of hands come together in rancorous applause. And so they should. Wow. He saved the, what shall we say, the heaviest breathing for the last, didn't he? That's Fantasy on Themes from Verdi's Rigoletto by Bassi. This sort of thing composers and performers and I guess audiences all loved late in the 19th century. You get the whole opera boiled down into 10 or 20 minutes of virtuosic playing. That was quite a treat to be in the front row for that. The clarinetist is Joe Morris, and he's the new clarinetist with the Madison Symphony, and you'll be performing this weekend.
Yes, that's right.
With, say, Augustin Haderlich will be the violinist, and actually he'll be on the show Thursday, not performing, but we'll be talking to him and hearing some of his latest recordings. And Kit, what's in the offing for you? When's our next chance to hear you?
Well, actually, I'm playing on Friday with Marc Vallon, my bassoonist colleague, and so that'll be some interesting music. And then my next recital here is, I think, the 28th of February. I'm doing my annual faculty recital here in town, and then
those are always events, to say the least. I was rereading recently that 2010 LA Times review of your Rzhevsky and Goldberg Variations, both taken without pause. And so, what's going to be? Have you picked your February 28th program yet?
I think what I'm zeroing in on is I'll do another one of these Beethoven symphony transcriptions. So it'll be the Eroica.
Oh, wow.
And then I also, a piece I've been wanting to learn for a long time is the Prokofiev Sixth Sonata. So I'm
quite the pairing.
Starting work on that, and it's quite the barrel of laughs. It's fantastic music.
I can well imagine. That after, of course, having done a complete Beethoven cycle a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Who knows what else you have up your sleeve. We want to hear more about that later, too. Well, thanks both of you for being on the show today. It was a real
thanks
treat.
Thanks for having us.
And I do want to hear more about some of these techniques. We didn't have time to talk about them, but there's quite the parade of them that you treated us to, Joe. So we'll look forward to hearing more of that.